Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, or the website scalpeledge.com. The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome back to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. We're going to talk about coronavirus today. Now, I know you've heard a lot about the coronavirus. I mean, how can you not? It's on every news station. The mainstream media is streaming coronavirus panic across the airwaves. We have President Trump and his administration calmly walking to the microphone, providing actual science experts and telling us what they know about the coronavirus and what they think that we should do as an American populace to stay safe. And I appreciate our president for that, and I want to thank him for it. I want to thank him for his leadership in a time of turmoil. I want to thank him for his leadership in a time of turmoil for our nation, while he has been in a constant turmoil from attacks from a mainstream media, a rogue Democrat party, and unscrupulous Republicans during his entire presidency to date. Yet during this turmoil on the inside and obvious turmoil on the outside, our president has remained a steady hand on the tiller of this nation. And I don't say that lightly. You see, the coronavirus is a problem. I believe, and I've said this months ago, I believe it's a pandemic already. That horse was already out of the barn before folks realized that it had gotten that far. Now, that's no one's fault. It's not to go back and look at the fault of why we got here. No, our president is just looking at where we are and where we need to go to make America great again and to keep our nation safe. But I will tell you, as a physician, someone that is authored many articles in peer-reviewed journals, and has spent my entire life studying scientific method and principle, that a pandemic is bad, but a panic-demic is fatal. Oswald Chambers said, "It is a trying thing to continue with a man who persists in giving an abstract supposition as a concrete fact." And that's what we're seeing in the mainstream media. That's what we're seeing with an irresponsible, rogue Democrat party. They're speaking in abstract to the American populace, but they're clothing it in fact. They're saying this is what's happening when it's not. They're saying this is going to happen when it probably won't. And what it amounts to is screaming fire in a crowded theater in the middle of Alaska, in a theater that's made of ice and has no flammable material in it, but the mainstream media doesn't care because they're going to scream fire. They're going to scream it loud. They're going to scream it long enough because they're progressives. Progressive liberalism no longer views self-preservation of the United States as rational good. Through the insidious recruitment of young people and ideologues, they openly proclaim now that self-preservation and national security must be subordinate to openness and diversity. Americans' immigration policies, we were told, should demonstrate our commitment to diversity because an important part of the American character is openness, and our commitment to diversity is an affirmation of, you know, who we are as Americans. If this carries a risk to our security and now our health, it is a small price to pay. I mean, indeed, the willing assumption of risk adds the authenticity to our commitment, according to the Democrats and the mainstream media. We got to keep these borders open. We got to be more diverse. Forget about diversity of ideas. Forget about diversity of accomplishment. Forget about awarding success with advancement. But let's just award diversity based on the window dressing and advance that. Now, it may crater the system, but with the liberals, that's okay. They want us to suspend our intellects and ignore the true history and experience of our nation. They have redefined American principles and character to what I believe a linear absolute acceptance of diversity. Devotion to Republican principles, Republican virtue, and habits and manners of free citizens, self-reliance are now mocked and discarded in the dumpster of racism, xenophobia, and bigotry. You know, just basically everything that has made our country great. In the name of tolerance, they are intolerant of everything that represents the greatness of our nation. And I will say they're more than intolerant. I would just call it ignorant. Whether it's actually them wanting to be ignorant, willful ignorance, or unwillful ignorance, the Democrats, the mainstream media, are not paying attention to history, are not paying attention to experience. And right now we have a crisis from within in our country, and that crisis is coronavirus. Thank God we have a president that has been standing and looking forward and not being distracted by the waves of progressivism, by the waves of socialism from the Democrat Party, by the snipes from the mainstream media, by the attack after attack after attack on this president and his administration that have all fallen to the wayside and been shown to be false. We all lived through Russian collusion. We all lived through obstruction of justice, Stormy Daniels, Michael Avenatti. We all lived through the impeachment hearings, which were shown to be nothing but a farce, and now no one even talks about it. But during all that pomp and circumstance from the Democrat Party when Nancy Pelosi was handing out pens, something insidious had come to our shores, and that was the coronavirus. Now, I've spoken about it briefly, or actually I spoke about it in our last podcast quite extensively, but I'm going to go now to where we are, what I think you should do, and what my recommendations would be. Winston Churchill famously said, "There is no such thing as public opinion. There is only published opinion." And I look at this time in our history to great figures in past history like Winston Churchill, who were attacked and pillared by a liberal media in England, by a liberal government party in England that would attack him. Yet when their nation was under attack, and when they were scared, when they realized we needed a leader, who did they turn to? They turned to Winston Churchill. You see, leaders ignore the snipes. They ignore the attacks. They keep their hand on the tiller of their nation because they can see past themselves and towards the future of their country. And Winston Churchill was one of those people. And a lot of his quotes, a lot of his speeches from the past, we should pull forward to the future and apply them to what we're seeing today, because this man unquestionably had great wisdom. He said, "There is nothing government can give you that it hasn't taken from you in the first place." And remember that, because we're going to apply it to the coronavirus today. And he says, "A nation that forgets its past has no future." He didn't say a nation that forgets its past has, you know, a good chance at making a future or needs to pay attention. No, he just says you have no future. And I love when he said this: "Some men change their party for the sake of their principles. Others, their principles for the sake of their party." And we're seeing that, unfortunately, on both sides of the aisle. Some politicians are standing and showing principled decision-making. A lot, and unfortunately, some Republicans, but mostly on the Democrat side, have just changed their principles for the sake of their party. That's why the Democrat Party that was against open borders 10 years ago is now for open borders now, because they need votes. And so we're going to discuss the coronavirus today, and we're going to use the lens of the current political atmosphere, our current president, and we're going to look at past precedent, when another influenza emergency appeared back during the swine flu in 2009, and I remember it well. And we're going to kind of get an idea where we are today, because I believe in honest opinion, and I pray people listen to it, not published opinion. You know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts. I believe Andrew Wilkow famously said that, if I'm not mistaken. You can have your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. And if he didn't and someone else did, could have been Brian Mudd or something, I apologize. But I've heard that in the past, and it stuck. Because in April of 2009, H1N1 swine flu was first detected in the United States. Now, who was president then? That was President Obama. Now, I gave you some quotes to start this out, and I don't want you to glaze over on this, because this is important, because I'm going to explain to you what's going on with the coronavirus, and I'm going to bring it and distill it down to its basic parts, and I'm going to give you a way forward, and I think this is a good way forward. I think our president understands this. I've been listening to a lot of conservatives and non-conservatives talk about this, and some of them are making good points, but I don't think they've all made the point that I'm going to make today. So I hope you stick with me, because this might get interesting. But I need to put some context to this. I need to give some background or information so you understand where we are, what we need to do, because we've had pandemics in the past. According to the Center for Disease Control, the swine flu virus was a unique combination of influenza virus genes never previously identified in either animals or people. What does that sound like? Sounds like what we're dealing with today. It began to spread immediately. And there's an article that talks about this in Red State, and I'm going to put it in our show notes. And I got this early description from that. I remembered it, but I went and tried to find some type of reference that I could pass along that was actually credible, and I believe this Red State article is. And it continued the spread immediately, and President Obama addressed Americans briefly at the end of April. He said U.S. health officials were monitoring the situation, and he had asked for $1.5 billion from Congress just to support the efforts. Now, we never heard Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer saying that wasn't enough money. President Obama didn't declare a national emergency, but guess what? On October 24, 2009, President Obama issued a statement declaring H1N1 pandemic a national emergency. But by that time, in the United States, we had millions of people infected, and at least 20,000 had been hospitalized, and more than 1,000 had died. Now, you know what you're listening to today. You hear it going after President Trump and how he's handling this coronavirus. Did anyone even talk about President Obama? I'll answer it for you. No, they didn't. On November 12, 2009, the CDC reported an estimated 22 million Americans had been infected with H1N1 and 4,000 had died. Now, let's fast forward to today. So you had 4,000 Americans die, 22 million Americans infected, and you had 20 million Americans infected you had millions of Americans infected before President Obama even declared that a national emergency in October, but he knew about it from open source in April. So fast forward today, President Trump declared a public health emergency on January 31st, 2020. Now, on December 30th, just a month earlier, scientists in China had a cluster of patients with pneumonia of unknown etiology. And a week later, on January 7th, 3 weeks before President Trump declared an emergency, the coronavirus was isolated from those patients. So President Mom Jeans took 5-6 months to declare emergency. Yet President Trump declared an emergency in 3 weeks. Oh, and by the way, you know what President Trump was doing during that time period that he was declaring emergency? He was defending himself from a false impeachment trial. So on those days, I just saw that President Trump, while he was declaring an emergency, he also began restricting U.S. access to non-citizens from China. And the Democrats went crazy. They accused him of being a racist, because remember, it's all about diversity. It's all about tolerance, you know, in the name of intolerance. Flights filled with U.S. citizens who were in Wuhan were brought back to America, and these people were quarantined on U.S. military bases for 2 weeks. Did you hear about that? No. Because it didn't make the published opinion. U.S. citizens who have been in China's Hubei province during the past 14 days and that returned to the United States all underwent health screenings. All flights from China to the U.S. were funneled to one of seven airports that were designated ports of entry: New York, San Francisco, Seattle, Honolulu, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Atlanta. The Trump administration took decisive action to minimize the impact of coronavirus in the first month. Where are you hearing that on the mainstream media? The disease had been declared a public emergency 1 month before the first U.S. death. And I will just remind you that President Obama declared swine flu a public emergency after 1,000 deaths in the U.S. So there's a lot of unwarranted criticism coming from the left, because I believe President Trump and his administration are focused on one thing, and that's protecting Americans. You know why? Because he loves this nation. Now, that's not going to keep the brain-dead chuckleheads in the mainstream media from attacking him. I mean, it didn't stop CNN's Brian Stelter, who, dumbest person on the planet, wasn't smart enough to originate probably what he said. But he wrote the following tweet: since the dawn of the Trump era, countless experts have warned that the president's lack of credibility would imperil the country in an event of an emergency. As the coronavirus outbreak worsens, those fears may be coming true. And that's how you create a panic-demic, not a pandemic. And during that time President Trump was doing this, I just looked up in the see what the rest of our country was doing. And basically, Greta Thunberg was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. The Democratic leaders had come out and said they won't accept the Trump acquittal on the impeachment as legitimate. Nancy Pelosi violated protocol by refusing to announce Trump properly at the State of the Union. You know, real substantive stuff. Instead of recognizing that President Trump had already declared the coronavirus a national emergency. But the other branches, primarily the House and the Senate, they were doing other stuff. They weren't getting behind this president. They weren't understanding and breaking into small groups and realizing that they needed to keep America safe, you know, because their power's threatened by President Trump. And they believe in power over principle. They believe in personal power over the people that elected them. So I'm going to explain to you what the coronavirus is now. I'm going to give you 10 reasons why you shouldn't panic. There was actually an article that said coronavirus, 10 reasons why you shouldn't panic. And I read through a lot of these articles. I studied a lot of peer-reviewed journals. I have a up-to-date app on my phone and in my computer. It's a database that correlates all the scientific literature that's up-to-date. Physicians have access to it if you pay a fee, and I do. And I'm going to tell you 10 reasons why you shouldn't panic. Number one, we know what it is. It's been identified, and there are steps being taken to mitigate it. Number two, we know how to detect it. Number three, the situation in China and Korea are improving. Those situations are actually improving, which means there's a shelf life to this. Number four, 80%, and these are facts, 80% of the cases of coronavirus are mild, and I'm going to get more into that. Number five, people recover. Number six, symptoms are mild in children. Number seven, you can wipe the virus clean. Yeah, Lysol, soap. You can clean it. Number eight, science is on it globally. We don't need government to solve all our problems. We need government to allow the free market and scientists around the world to attack this, because you have to recognize a problem before you can attack it. And thank God President Trump recognized early on this was a problem. Number nine, there are vaccine prototypes out there. And we have number 10, antiviral trials are on the way. But I want to give you a little more understanding of this. I want to give you a little more understanding of why we need to treat this virus with respect, but at the same time, if we understand it, we don't want to create a panic. Because I will tell you, and I'm going to step out and say this, as a physician, and based on all the research that I've reviewed and all the reports, and I'm going to support it. Number one, I believe this is a pandemic and we have to pay attention to it, and there will be people that die from it. But I do not believe that it will be as big a problem as it could be if people understand what it is and we don't allow it to become a panic-demic. Because I'm not scared of COVID-19. We can mitigate that problem. What we can't mitigate is false reports, people driving panic and fear. Because if you overload our healthcare systems with panic and fear, patients that are critical, that have pneumonia from other causes, that are elderly, that have been in car accidents, that are having heart attacks and any other problems, are not going to be able to receive treatment. And you will crush the medical system, and you will have a paradoxical increase in mortality of American citizens that is tangentially related to this virus, but not directly related. So if people panic and don't understand what's going on, it'll create a wave of fear that'll induce the entire society in a spellbinding spiral of panic, and they're going to want to stockpile obscene quantities of anything that could fill their bomb shelter outside. You know, this is not the zombie apocalypse, but the media wants you to think it is. But my concern is that hospitals will be overwhelmed with anyone who thinks they probably don't have it, but may as well just, you know, go get checked. And you never know. So people will go into the hospitals. And then those patients, like I said, with emphysema, heart problems, pneumonia, strokes, they're going to pay the price because they're not going to be treated in a timely fashion in our emergency facilities. Now, epidemic fears will limit trade. They will harm partnerships in multiple sectors, business and otherwise, and ultimately culminate in a global recession, and that will hurt us too. So if you want to understand how we can fix this problem and help our president, then you need to understand this virus. This virus, based on the best evidence we have, we need to look at the Princess Cruise Line, Japanese cruise ship, which was a stable patient population, and it has shown us the actual mortality rate, or what we think it is, and what we can do to get through this. Because the actual mortality rate, I believe, is going to be 1% or less. Now, this is higher than the actual flu. But the difference is, and if you look at this cruise ship, because it's really solid information, unfortunately, it's like a floating lab experiment. The only people that died from the virus were all over 70 years old and all had previous medical problems. And that's what this virus does. For most people, like I said, 80%, you're not even going to know you had it. Some people will get quite sick, but the people that will perish and die are people with pre-existing lung problems for the most part. Now, you're seeing a higher incidence of death in China, but anyone that's been to China that understands that population and that society, a lot of Chinese men smoke cigarettes and have compromised lungs to begin with. And unfortunately, unlike Bernie Sanders would want you to believe, the healthcare in China is very substandard because it's a communist country. Healthcare here is some of the best in the world, but it doesn't matter how good the healthcare system is. If people run to the doctor and run to the ER just to make sure, actual patients are going to die from other problems. And we hope to prevent that as physicians and people that care about this nation. Now, I've seen things out in the medical literature and the medical opinion pieces, and I've seen things on Twitter from doctors that are blaming this president for this and saying that we're not ready as a nation. But I can tell you we're ready as a nation. You know why? Because we understand self-government. So self-govern yourself by understanding the facts. If you are working with anyone that is immunocompromised, an elderly person with lung problems, you need to pay attention to your exposure because you could take that to someone. The reason that this, and I haven't heard this anywhere else, maybe it's been said, but I don't believe so, that I think it's such a severe problem, is that most viruses, most flus, you don't have the ability to infect other people until you become symptomatic. The difference here is this is more of a stealth virus. You can carry it and be able to infect other people. I want to say this as simple as possible and not show any symptoms. And that's where the danger is. Because people that had lots of symptoms with the flu, they're not going to go take care of an elderly or sick person. They're not going to walk in and take care of someone in convalescence or immunosuppressed. But someone with the coronavirus that doesn't know they have it and that are working with those folks, that's how those folks can contract it, and that's where you get the higher death rate. Don't make it a pandemic. Don't make a pandemic a panic-demic. Understand that if you work with someone that is immunosuppressed, elderly, has lung problems, there's a chance that if you have it, you can pass it to them. That's what we need to be careful of. We don't need to be careful of going to school. We don't need to be careful of going to work. If you work in a workplace with the same people, everyone should understand that doesn't have a big risk of getting it and transmitting it. If you've traveled recently, been around other folks recently that have traveled to Europe or Asia, then you need to recognize, am I around someone that could catch this, that it would cause harm, i.e. elderly, lung problems, along those lines. See, it's not about fear. It's about facts. We need to clean our hands. We need to open our hearts, and we need to pay attention to what's going on and listen to our president, listen to the experts at the CDC and our vice president, who's doing a fantastic job in leading this, and not fall for the hype and the propaganda. We don't need to fall for people that are saying, continue to open our borders. And as I'm going to show you after the break, feel like Medicare for All or you know, single-payer healthcare would solve this problem. Just the opposite. It would cause greater death, greater frustration, greater panic. But the Democrats, they don't care. They've just found their new leader in Joe Biden. Evidently, from the other day, he's going to be the crown prince of the Democrat Party, which is pretty unusual, because you talk about someone who's not all there. That's Joe Biden. And can you imagine if someone like a Joe Biden leading the charge against the coronavirus? Do you think Joe Biden or the Democrats would look at this as President Trump had, would shut down travel to countries that had a high incidence of this, would lock down the borders, and would lead in the middle of a storm while they're being attacked politically? Or do you think they would just, you know, not let this crisis go to waste and try to push something through like Medicare for All? Do you think they would try to push something through like the Family Leave Act? Do you think they would try to push something through like, I don't know, any of their big bloated government programs? I wonder. Actually, I don't. Grabian put together a great montage. Cut to go.
As the coronavirus is rapidly spreading across the U.S., Trump Republicans are trying to dismantle Obamacare in court and leave 20 million people uninsured. Perfect.
Well, this is a case for universal health care.
If there's coronavirus, universal health care would solve a lot of it.
This is an opportunity for us to come to grips with the fact that we absolutely have to transform our health care system.
What do you say to people who are asked to
self-quarantine? I'm sure some of them don't.
Who don't have paid sick leave and frankly cannot afford to stay home for those 2 weeks without a paycheck and might be worried about losing their jobs.
I think the government should step in. That would be the most logical choice.
For 40 years, we have been shredding the social safety net. That's a debate we should be having.
Ideally, what we have is a person who believes in universal health care and paid sick leave.
If we were living in the system we want to live in, that I want to see, of course everybody would have paid medical leave.
You know, at a bare
okay,
minimum,
stop. I can't take these guys anymore. Instead of speaking with facts, instead of speaking authoritatively on the principles and facts that we know about this virus and on what we need to do to keep people safe, like self-quarantine if you work with someone or you've had an exposure. No, they're just going out and they're pushing for more government, more big programs. Does anyone remember the death panels from Obamacare? Can you imagine, since this virus attacks mainly the elderly and kills the elderly, what they would just tell you is keep them home and keep them comfortable. That would be universal health care. Now, while it may make funeral parlors massive dividends It wouldn't help the American people. Single payer is a disaster, and as a physician, I can tell you, I find it quite ironic that the folks that gave us Obamacare are now running on the fact that Obamacare has failed, so they want to fix it again. I mean, if I take my car to the mechanic and he says he fixed my engine and my engine gets worse and my car breaks again, do I take it back to the same mechanic? Because the Democrats would keep going back to that mechanic again and again, or they would have you do it. Because they want diversity. They no longer believe in God and country, but in the gospel of political correctness, socialism, and globalism. And as a physician, that's a terminal diagnosis for our republic and our society. Diversity is the cover for action. It marches under the banner of tolerance by creating a fortress of intolerance. And listen to the Democrats. The ideologues want to rule with an iron fist of political correctness, which insidiously suppresses free speech and challenges to their flawed and corrosive ideology. That's why Churchill talked about published opinion, not public. The problem is that the current majority of Republican politicians cringe and hide whenever they are charged with any politically incorrect infraction. Some of the most egregious, and I would just have you see Mittens Romney, will surrender preemptively. This applies equally to other violations of political correctness, though. I mean, we're going to get hit with homophobia, Islamophobia, xenophobia, sexism, and a host of other so-called irrational prejudices. After all, there is no rational defense against an irrational fear, which is presumably what the phobias are. Now that we see this happening, we, the American citizens, recognize that these irrational fears will cover up an actual fear of a pandemic. And these irrational fears will turn a pandemic that could be controlled into a panic-demic that could cause paradoxical damage and mortality. People would die because they don't have access to health care. The Democrats' solution? Create a single payer where everyone has free health care. Now, I've heard it said where the lines are long where the burgers are free. Can you imagine free health care? Because remember, Winston Churchill said the government can't give you anything that they haven't taken from someone else. And Republicans are rendering themselves defenseless against this political correctness. And the establishment wing of the party doesn't seem overly concerned as they frequently join the chorus of Democrats in denouncing our president's violation of political correctness, even in the midst of this crisis. Only President Trump seems undeterred by the tyrannous threat that rests at the core of political correctness and the failure to recognize actual crisis, which is the fuel to drive a continuous cold civil war, divide the American people in the face of a suicidal ideology. The Scalpel is sponsored by Z-Bones Headphones. Their flagship product, Z-Bones Bone Conduction Headphones, are unlike any Bluetooth listening device you have ever used. They're really amazing to hear with. Z-Bones Headphones work through bone conduction. The comfortable pads rest next to your ear, not in your ear. The sound is transmitted through the bones to your eardrum. With an open-ear design, nothing is stuck in your ear, which means you maintain situational awareness or environmental awareness by hearing your surroundings. You can still hear the fullness of your music, though, or whatever podcast, hopefully ours, that you're listening to. You can even use Z-Bones while using ear protection at sporting events like races or at the shooting range. Z-Bones Bone Conduction Headphones are a Bluetooth device that work with any iOS or Android phone system or tablet, and they give you 6 hours of call time and 7 days of standby. You can put on a cap and have your Z-Bones on, and you can't even hardly tell you have anything on while you're listening to music. This is a cool headset. It's innovative technology, and I frankly love it. And I'm very happy that they've chosen to sponsor us. So go check them out. Get them at zbones.io. Use the discount code SCALPEL70 for a 10% discount. And be sure to use the Z-Bones when you're listening to the Scalpel podcast. Welcome back to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. We're talking about the coronavirus today. Now, the Democrats have already said they have the answer to coronavirus. Paid family leave. Single-payer health care. Both of those would do nothing to actually address the problem here. And we've addressed that problem to a certain point. We understand what the coronavirus is. We understand it's not as deadly as we think it is. But the Democrats don't want you to know that. They want to drive a panic. They want to drive a panic-demic because they think they can use that to leverage against our president to keep and maintain power. Recent article in Slate.com came out by an actual physician working with Brigham's and Women's Hospital and Harvard University, I believe, by Jeremy Faust. And it's titled, COVID-19 Isn't as Deadly as We Think. Now, you've heard what I said. Let's listen to what this physician has to say. He said, there are many compelling reasons to conclude that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, is not nearly as deadly as currently feared. But COVID-19 panic has set in nonetheless. You can't find hand sanitizer in stores, and N95 face masks are being sold online for exorbitant prices. Never mind that neither is this the best way to protect against the virus. Yes, just wash your hands, he says, like I told you. The public is behaving as this is epidemic is the next Spanish flu, which is frankly understandable given that the initial reports have staked COVID-19 mortality at 2 to 3%, quite similar to the 1918 pandemic that killed tens of millions of people. But this author goes on, allow me to be the bearer of good news. These frightening numbers are unlikely to hold. The true case fatality rate, known as the CFR of this virus, is likely to be far lower than current reports suggest. Even some lower estimates, such as the 1% death rate recently mentioned by the directors of the NIH and the CDC and prevention, likely substantially overstate the case. And I agree with this author. We shouldn't be surprised that the numbers are inflated. In past epidemics, CFRs were floridly exaggerated. For example, in 2009, the H1N1 pandemic, some early estimates were 10 times greater than the actual CFR, which was 1.28%. Those are the people, the percentage that died. Epidemiologists think quibble in terms of numerators and denominators, which patients were included when fractional estimates were calculated, which weren't. Were those decisions valid? And the results change a lot as the result. He said, we're seeing this now because in the early days in Wuhan, China, the CFR was more than 4%, but now it's falling. And the reported CFR has dropped to below 2%, and now it's gone down further to 0.2 to 0.4%. See, what you're finding out is more and more people have been infected, but they didn't die, and that lowers the CFR. New reports from the World Health Organization that estimate the global death rate of COVID-19 to be 3.4% higher than previously believed is not cause for further panic. This number is subject to the same forces that we would normally expect to inaccurately embellish death rate statistics early in an epidemic. And if anything, this just underscores how early we are in this pandemic. And this guy goes on to talk about what I mentioned to you. The most straightforward and compelling evidence, the true case fatality rate of SARS-CoV-19 or COV-2 is well under 1%, comes not from statistical trends or methodological massage, but from data from the Diamond Princess cruise outbreak and subsequent quarantine off the coast of Japan. The author goes on to talk about this and says that because the Diamond Princess data provides good insight, of the 3,700 plus people on board, 705 tested positive. And let me just say something here. That's surprisingly low considered that everyone was in close confinement, which tells you that this is not quite as virulent or as robust outside the body as most people have tried to make it seem. And of those, more than half are asymptomatic of those patients. He said it halves the true fatality rate. And he says, on the Diamond Princess, 6 deaths have occurred among the passengers, constituting a case fatality rate of 0.85%, unlike the data from China and elsewhere. And he said the most important insight is that the 6 fatalities occurred in patients who were all more than 70 years old. He goes on to talk about more He gets into more detail, and you can read the article. But he says all this suggests that COVID-19 is a relatively benign disease for most young people and potentially devastating one for the old and chronically ill. And he said everything comes down to hygiene and isolation. But in particular, we need to focus on the right people in the right places. Nursing homes, not schools. Hospitals, not planes. And we need good hygiene, just like we do during the flu season. And it's like I told you. He doesn't say it, but I think the insidious part of this disease is that you can be in a state to infect other people and not know you have it. So you need to pay attention on who you interact with. And if you pass it to someone who's taking care of someone that's sick or elderly or immunocompromised, then you need to pay attention. Again, we need to educate the American populace and not drive a media panic. Unfortunately, the mainstream media doesn't seem like that's very good thing, because they just want to go out and attack our president. They want to say that he hasn't done enough. They want to say that he hasn't kept America safe. But like I told you, in early January, our president instituted a travel ban. And the other day, a gentleman by the name of Dr. Fauci, who's the head of the CDC in charge of the coronavirus, and I would say Dr. Fauci has worked for almost every administration for the past 30 years. He is strictly nonpartisan, and that has been shown, had this to say about President Trump's handling of the coronavirus. Cut one.
Yeah, there's no question that if we had not done that in a timely way, there would have been many more travel-related cases from China. And as you know, the outbreak that we're having here in the country, this cases, originated from travel-related cases that came from China. And then we had the issue in Washington State and what we're seeing now in other states. So coming from outside within was the thing that started it. So I think doing that saved us a lot of concern and a lot of suffering, I think.
So President Trump put his principles before anything else, and that was keeping this country safe. So while he was under 24/7 barrage from a mainstream media Democrat party that was impeaching him and attacking him, he stepped out and said, you know what, put in a travel ban. Stop these folks from doing that, coming here. He did it because he knew he needed to keep safe. Now, he didn't lick his finger, stick it up, and let the political wind push it back and forth and tell him what he should do, like I believe every Democrat and a lot of Republicans would do. No, he's a leader. He's a Winston Churchill. He had the courage of his convictions, and he steered America on the right course, preventing a much bigger tragedy from happening than we're currently seeing right now. And I, for one, just want to say thank you to our president. Thank you to his team that's working so hard on this, Vice President Pence and the folks at the CDC. Thank you to the doctors and the first responders that are taking care of people. And it is my prayer that you will educate yourself, that you will understand that this is insidious and can harm people with lung problems and elderly. But while it is a pandemic and a lot of people will get this virus, it doesn't have to kill a lot of people like a panic-demic would. Make yourself a student of history. Support our president. Look at the news with an objective eye. Don't be swayed by published opinion, but look at history. Look at your own experience and pray for this nation and our president. And most importantly, just keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Just obey your secret safe with the NSA. And God we trust, or the CIA. Standing on the edge of a revolution.
The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, or the website scalpeledge.com.